Everybody, welcome back to Marvel Fanfare. I'm Logan, and I have another co-host that you've never heard before.
I'm Stephanie.
And Stephanie, while she has recorded tons of YouTube content, is nervous about recording a podcast with me.
I am. It's something I've never done, so I'm super excited.
I mean, it's not any different than the YouTube stuff. I think it's a major downgrade. There's no video. I guess maybe if you're narrating content, it's a little, because you have something to focus on.
That's true.
So if we were doing like a commentary track, which is fun and I've done, then I guess that might be, because you always be like, yeah, look at this thing on the screen. but yeah, I don't know. So yeah, we're going to talk about Captain America, Brave New World, not New World Order, which is what I have been calling it for, I don't know, 2 years. Every time it comes up in any conversation with any other nerd that I know, I'm like, yeah, I can't wait to see New World Order. And they're like, what? Like, Brave New World. That one, because I'm an idiot. I can't remember the name of the movie. We just saw it, I don't know, what, 4 or 5 hours ago?
Yeah, something like that, about 5 hours ago. And it was great.
Yeah. Yeah, not spoilers, we loved it. well, actually, I want to ask you about, so you wanted to know what you had to see before the movie. And right. The one thing I told you was you probably need to watch Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Right.
Which, like, legit spoilers for the movie. It turns out what I needed to tell you to watch was The Incredible Hulk. Because Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which was a show on Disney Plus a few years ago, we actually did on the podcast, me and I think Jacob and Elizabeth, my cousins. And we enjoyed it. You just watched Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
I did.
What did you think about the show?
I thought it was good. It had some moments where it repetitively went over the same idea. I was like, okay, I get it. He's becoming Captain America. Got it. Falcon, Captain America. For it. And it was like the next episode's the same thing. And I was like, okay, I got it. Like, it's a great concept. I'm for it. I think Sam is a great character. I love him as the Falcon, even more so as Captain America. But it was like at episode like 5, I was like, I got it. He's the best choice. Like, I don't understand what we're still doing here. So it was good. I'm glad I watched it before I saw Brave New World.
Yeah, I really wish I would have known, which I guess it's spoilers to know that you really need to have seen The Incredible Hulk to make some sense of some of the characters and the things that are mentioned. But yeah, I remember really enjoying the show. I think you're absolutely right. Maybe unless you dig into the production of the show, you probably like don't know that the show that we got in Falcon and the Winter Soldier was not the show that they filmed initially. It was actually, the story was about this terrorist organization, which is in the show, creating a worldwide pandemic.
Right.
And then they were filming in 2019. Mm-hmm. And by the time they had wrapped production on the show and announced that it was going to air in January of 2020, we get to January of 2020 and it's like, we absolutely cannot release a show about a terrorist organization creating a worldwide pandemic.
Right.
So they reshot half the show, which is probably where the, like, oh, we have to beef this up. What can we add here? And it's just like, well, we'll just go over the same beats over and over and over and over. Right. I should have revisited it just to see, but I'm with you. Like Sam, I like Anthony Mackie a lot.
Oh, I do too.
I don't know what it is about the guy, but he's just so much fun. Anything I've ever seen him in, he just does it. He's just charismatic. He's got a show on Peacock that nobody watches based on a video game that hasn't been relevant in 20 years called Twisted Metal that's coming back.
I love that show.
It's so fucking good.
It is.
And it doesn't have any right to be. And most of that is just because he's fun.
He's so good. And you feel like he's the type of person that he's probably truly like that all the time. You're just catching a glimpse of it on screen.
Yeah.
Because you can't pretend that much.
Yeah. I completely agree. But things that, like, pre-MCU, like, ridiculous things. Like, he did a movie with Hugh Jackman called Real Steel about robots, like, fighting each other, which is just a insane concept. I don't know. It just works. And it was a Shawn Levy movie, the guy that just did Wolverine and Deadpool. Mm-hmm. So like there's all kinds of connections there. There's a batshit insane Matt Damon movie that he did called the Adjustment Bureau.
I haven't seen that one.
It's sweet and romantic. And it's got this like weird, almost sci-fi Twilight Zone premise. It's about this politician and this dancer who wind up like romantically entangled, but literally universal forces are trying to keep them apart. Like men in black hats, like not secret government shit. Like, are they angels? Are they demons? It's wild, but like Damon's always good, but Howard Mackie. Anthony Mackie makes it like just grounds it, and I've always really loved him. Like, I probably the first thing I ever saw him in was in the Hurt Locker. Mm-hmm. Oh no, 8 Mile. 8 Mile is the first thing I saw. He's Papa Doc in 8 Mile.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the first thing I saw him, and then I remember him showing up in We Are Marshall 2, maybe. That was about the same time as the Hurt Locker. I was like, I really like this guy. And then when he became a Marvel guy, it was just like, yeah, he's great. I mean, most of what makes... I love the first Captain America movie, but him and Bucky really make the Cap character so much better. Rogers Cap. Like, the on your left stuff. And it all freaking works. So him getting a chance to like really be that character, I was really happy for him and really happy that the movie works overall, because much like the TV show, again, if you don't get into the behind the scenes stuff, it's like, okay, whatever. But they reshot this movie like 3 times. and I think I loved it, but I do think some of it shows in like some weird scene transitions where it's like, feels like there might have supposed to have been something else here.
Well, what got me is that there were a couple scenes where the picture is upside down and you are looking at things, and I'm just like, are we sure we meant to do that? Like, this is the final cut? Are you sure? And so, I think it was those moments for me that felt kind of spliced in.
I think that is, so what they wanted, Kevin Feige, producer extraordinaire, has talked about it. What they wanted, much like they had with Winter Soldier, was this 70s thriller thing, like politically charged thriller. And in the 70s, you had all these filmmakers experimenting with all these styles in movies you didn't see that stuff in. So you would have these weird, you know, European crazy upside down shots and, you know, like weird angles, and they would just put that in mainstream. Ripley is being insane. They would put them in these movies, and, you know, people would go nuts over them. So I think that's kind of like what they were going for. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But overall, it absolutely works.
It does. Overall, it just felt like those moments, you kind of felt maybe like you were a little spliced into the movie, just a little bit.
Yeah. I'm always curious if other people can tell, and this sounds like a braggadocious thing, but it's not. The end, not to jump to the finale, the end showdown between him and Thunderbolt Ross is filmed on, I'm pretty sure, the volume in Atlanta, which is what they film The Mandalorian on, where it's entirely digital background. And you're supposed to seamlessly blend into it, for anybody that doesn't know. But right. So some people, like, I know plenty of people who can watch that stuff and be like, yeah, I don't see anything. But when I see it, I'm just like, I can tell. I can tell that they're not really there.
I can absolutely tell that we were on a straight green screen. Yeah.
Like,
straight green screen. There was nothing real about that except the actual person that was standing there, and that was it. Like, which makes it hard because I feel like I'm distracted by the background when that happens.
I completely agree. Ripley, out of my face. For me, I think that was the only part of the movie, which sucks because it's the end of the movie.
Right.
But that was the only time I felt disconnected from all of that. And it's not even really the fighting. It's when he's standing there talking, or when Red Hulk is standing there, like, breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy because I was straight up worried about the Red Hulk look. I was like, I don't know that they're going to pull that off. Like, the Hulk always looks okay, but he's never exactly right.
Right. I think they did a great job.
I think this is the best they've ever done, the Hulk. Yeah.
And it's because it's Harrison Ford. I mean, nobody's going to screw up Red Hulk Harrison Ford. We're just not.
It is crazy that we've had plenty of Hulks. Eric Bana was the first big screen live action Hulk. We had, what's his name? Fight Club guy.
Edward Norton.
Yes. all night I have not been able to remember his name, and I do not know why. Who was in The Incredible Hulk. And then we've had, and now I just blanked on the regular MCU Hulk, Mark Ruffalo.
Yes.
We've had Mark Ruffalo for ages, and in Infinity War and Endgame, the Hulk feels Mark Ruffalo-esque, mostly because he's also talking like Mark Ruffalo.
Right.
But it blew my mind how much the Hulk looked, Red Hulk looked like Harrison Ford.
30 years ago, Harrison Ford.
Yeah, if he were jacked like 30 years ago, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
But I think they did a great job in the fact that they didn't have him talk as the Hulk.
Yes, yes.
I think that's what kills the Hulk any other time is the Hulk talking. Because when you're thinking about the Hulk in your mind, you're not thinking about a man who's putting words together. You're thinking about an animal that's out there reacting.
Yeah. I'm not the biggest fan of Smart Hulk, as they call him from the comics, Professor Hulk. It's fun, but it's a very gimmicky thing. And once you've had like 15 or 20 minutes of it, it's like, yeah, what's the point of the Hulk if he's not punching stuff?
Yeah.
Or tearing something apart, or, you know, like, that's what makes Age of Ultron for me so much fun, is the, like, the chaos that the Hulk creates, you know?
Absolutely.
So the movie was directed by a guy I am not at all familiar with, Julius Ona, but I was looking at his filmography. Because you're into some horror-esque stuff.
I am.
He directed a movie, a Cloverfield movie, The Cloverfield Paradox. And so I've never seen it.
I've never seen that. I've seen the original Cloverfield, which, as a person with motion sickness, was very hard for me to get through.
I can imagine.
I would say that I've probably avoided that if I've seen it, because I'm thinking it's going to be the same kind of jerky right. camera, and I can't do that twice.
Yeah, I can understand that. He's really not done much. He's directed a lot of shorts. Nothing. Cloverfield Paradox is probably his biggest movie. And I don't know. I think, considering, like, I guess maybe the original cut didn't test well, or they wanted to go a different way with the story, and they wound up having to reshoot this movie twice, or at least large parts of it. I don't know. That's pretty damn good.
I think so. I felt like there was a great come together of this story, whether it was the cast, the director. However this worked, it worked well.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think my favorite part of the show, not to keep going back to the show, was Carl Lumley as Isaiah Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew he was going to be in this, and like in the trailer, it shows that shot of him like standing up with the gun. So I knew there was going to be something there with him, kind of caught up in that aspect of the assassination. He's not in it a ton, but he is in it. He is a major, major part of it. And I don't know. I just love him as Isaiah Bradley. I thought it was such a good add to the show itself, and to follow up with it in the movie was really nice.
It was. That was great casting. Whoever did that casting and found him to be Isaiah Bradley was a perfect fit.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of those guys that's like, he's shown up in so damn much. And I mean, he's pretty old, so I've been watching him literally my entire life. There was an old TV show called, a superhero show called Mantis that was on when I was a kid, that at the time, it's one of those like mid-90s superhero things. Mm-hmm. If you watch it now, it's like, this is awful, but at the time, it's like, ooh, it's superheroes. And like, I remember him from that. But like, he's been in, he's one of those guys like my dad and my grandmother grew up like watching stuff that he was in.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to, I hate to get like political, but keeping that storyline in the movie when, like, in the real world right now, we're having our current president tell the military that, and schools and what, like, that they're not to teach about the Tuskegee Airmen is, you know, I don't know, it feels important. Like, it shouldn't, it should just be like, yeah, that's a thing that happened. But, you know, it'd be one of those things where we could easily just, we can excise that from the movie and not have to deal with, like, oh, people saying we're trying to be woke, or people getting offended, or, you know, because that's what's happening now. So, right. And they give him a chance to literally be the strong guy. Like, that. It's weird that that's my favorite fight in the movie, but it's really fun.
I don't know. There were so many parts I liked in this movie. It's hard for me to pick just one.
Harrison Ford was great too. There was a few shots of Harrison Ford doing the like super angry thing, and I'm like, yeah, old man shakes fist, screams at cloud is a little like you're almost hitting that little ridiculous line, but like they toe it mostly just right. And watching him get angry and almost turn into the Hulk is it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. That was a great part. I thought for sure we were going to see the Hulk then.
So. I was like, man, if you unleash the Hulk in the middle of the ocean on a giant like aircraft carrier or something, that's rough, man. how do you contain that?
You don't. Like, to me, I thought that we were going at that moment. I thought we were going in a completely different direction than where we actually went in this movie. I thought for sure we were going to have a Red Hulk out in the middle of the Indian Ocean just unleashing terror.
Like, Hulk claims the island for himself.
Yeah, like, I thought that's where we were going for that moment. I was like, oh, man. Like, this is just going to be impossible.
That would be so freaking great, man. It's just him on that big celestial head sticking. It's like, nah, this is mine now. Like, I thought you gotta fight me for it.
I thought for sure it was gonna kind of be like that Jurassic Park moment with, you know, T-Rex up on the tallest part just roaring it out. Thought that's where we were going with it.
All right, so since we're talking about the celestial head, this is a literal, so the Eternals came out in 2020. 5 years ago, and I know 5 years isn't a terribly long time, but the way Marvel has moved to not address something for 5 years is insane. This is the first Marvel project outside of like some minor mentions. I think it's there's like a picture of it in She-Hulk. It's the first Marvel project to address the fact that a giant alien god almost rose up out of the earth and is currently like just frozen dead in the Indian Ocean. That's just been going on for 5 years. Now, I guess in the timeline of the MCU, it hasn't been 5 years for them. The way this story, the way the movie kind of breaks it down, makes it seem like it happened not that long ago.
Right. There's something in the beginning, I missed the exact thing that they correlated, but it was something like this has recently happened, like past 60 days. And I was like, no, it's been longer than that, but okay. And it was something like, this is new. Like, we have to claim this. Like, we've gotten back samples. And it's like, it's been there for 5 years.
You got to experience, probably the last time this happened in a movie was Deadpool Wolverine, and you weren't there for that, but you got to experience it next to me when something truly surprisingly awesome and nerdy happens, and I am not aware that it's about to happen. In Deadpool and Wolverine, spoilers for that movie, when Blade steps out, Like, I lost my mind. And, it's that level of awesomeness, but it's not a character.
Right.
When he said adamantium.
Oh, my gosh. I think the whole theater lost their mind.
I was just like, my mouth dropped out. I was like, what? Which apparently this has been out there. So, like, I was looking at some stuff while I was walking Ripley when I got home. Apparently, I tend to shy away from anything that isn't official. Like, if it's not the official trailer, or I don't want to be really, really spoiled. So, like, a lot of the Deadpool stuff had been speculated on, but I didn't know about it because I stayed away from all that stuff. I don't want to read every minor little thing that may or may not happen. So that adamantium thing was, I guess, out there at some point, and people were like, oh, yeah, that's probably going to be in the movie. I just didn't know. And we haven't had a ton of X-Men related things. At the end of the Marvels, did you see the Marvels?
I did.
So, yeah, at the end, they go to that other universe, and Storm is there. Or not right. Storm, Beast is there.
Right.
There's some X-Men stuff in the third season of What If, which I know you haven't got to, so that's a little spoilery. Miss Marvel herself is a mutant, so that's mutant-related. Like, it's just been really, really sparse outside of Deadpool Wolverine, which I know counts, but, like, it's also like, yeah, does it? Like, I know they're in the MCU, but it's just all over the place. So, okay.
Well, for me, it begs the question of where we're going. Like, yeah. Now we've introduced adamantium. We've got the, you know, Celestial Island. We've had Deadpool Wolverine. You know, we've had a few other clips. I feel like coming this next, let's create a new Avengers group. We're going to potentially be looking at more X-Men related things blurring in to
it's
this
Chekhov's,
time.
So Chekhov's gun. The rule is Chekhov's gun. You introduce a gun in the first act. It has to go off in the third act. If you introduce adamantium, by the time you get to the third act, which I'm not necessarily in this movie, but you know what I mean. Like, you have to get to, like, adamantium only means, doesn't only, but very specifically means one thing. We've already got a Wolverine. Are we going to get another Wolverine? I know they're all, it's all like, oh, Hugh Jackman, like, they've got him locked in for forever. But, I mean, do they? Like, he is getting, I mean, it's been over 20 years. He can't look like that forever. I mean, it's
well, and they've already introduced a new quote unquote Wolverine with the little girl from Logan. Yeah. I can't think of her name, but
Laura.
There we go. So, I mean, we technically have one, but we haven't seen what's happened with her since Logan ended. So I feel like she could potentially even come and be a new Avenger. And that's your lead-in for Wolverine and adamantium.
Because I'm with you.
Then you have that, you know, classic Wolverine vibe. We've seen them together, and now she's taking all those things and moving forward while he semi-retires or...
Yeah, I like the idea of him being this mentor character and not necessarily always in the heat of the action. Which would have been fun for a lot of the aging out actors as their characters, but instead they just killed off a bunch of them, which was really, really sad and worked for the narrative. But now we have Robert Downey Jr. coming back, but not as Tony Stark,
which
as
is weird.
Dr. Doom.
which is weird. Did you also see, not to change the subject here, did you see the little like cameo insert about Dunphy?
No.
Oh my gosh. So the soldier who Sam Wilson is talking to, like the main soldier tests these pills.
Yeah.
His name is Dunphy, which is Demolition Man, D-Man.
Yeah.
That's Dennis Dunphy. And so we see, you know, all the comics, it's, you know, he's got heart problems because he's so strong. He technically does something, but we don't actually see that he's truly dead in this movie.
Yeah.
Nobody declares him. So there's nothing saying he's not going to come back, you know, as D-Man, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, that's that is pretty interesting. No, I absolutely did not pick up on that. But yeah, Commander Dennis Dunphy. And that it's the actor William Mark McCullough. Like he's not in the movie. I mean, he has maybe 5 minutes of screen time. But I mean, I think he does a fantastic job. He's a great bit player in a lot of things. He was in The Walking Dead, which I watched endlessly. He's been in maybe one or two episodes of Cobra Kai, which is a show I didn't know you watched, and now we get to bond over that as well. So he gets a good part in this.
Oh yeah. Well, and again with Demolition Man, you know, that outfit is 90% Wolverine.
Yeah, it's like this weird mix of Wolverine and Deadpool costumes.
Yeah. Which made it so much like the moment I saw that name, I was like, oh my God. And I was like, they're going to introduce D-Man, because that's the logical, in my mind, thing that's happening. We've had Deadpool, Wolverine, and now we're going to have Demolition Man. And so, again, we didn't see that he died. We just got told, you know, by Stearns that he died, that he killed him.
Yeah.
But if he's actually D-Man, he can withstand it because of all his physical strength.
Yeah. I mean, those pills were right there. Maybe he takes one of those pills and it saves his life, you know?
It can happen.
So you brought up Stearns, Tim Blake Nelson, who is a major part of The Incredible Hulk and has not been seen in the MCU since the end of that movie. So I knew he was in the movie. I thought he was going to be a minor player in the movie. I did not know that he was the main villain of this movie.
And that's so great. He's such an amazing actor. Like, everything he does to me is just gold.
I've never seen Tim Blake Nelson do anything that I didn't love him in. The movie can be absolutely
terrible,
stupid and silly, but Tim Blake Nelson, there is nothing he cannot do.
And nothing. He makes it, you feel so personal when he's talking about, you know, all the things that Ross has locked him up. You feel that connection of like, I know I'm not supposed to feel bad for you,
but
I feel bad.
Yeah. Like, cause it's fucked up. Like, to just like, you find out that Ross had been pumped him up to like increase his intelligence, to keep him locked away and make him his own like personal think tank. Like, that is incredibly messed up. Yeah. I just looked it up. Incredible Hulk was 2008.
Good God.
Been a minute. That is 17 years between appearances.
Maybe he was busy. He had something to do. He's locked away in prison. I mean, apparently.
So we talked about how good the Red Hulk looked, and that's all CGI and mocap.
Mm-hmm.
For Stearns, for like comic book lore, anybody who doesn't know, Samuel Stearns in the comics becomes a character named the Leader, who looks ridiculous and has this big bulbous head and is the smartest person on the planet if you listen to him, but he is pretty smart, and he's a Incredible Hulk villain, and it was this fun little Easter egg in the Incredible Hulk movie that once that specific Hulk version died, and they kind of just really didn't reference much that happened in the movie, everybody did see it, which weren't a lot of people, kind of just assumed that, oh, that's all it was ever going to be, is this fun little Easter egg that he got irradiated with gamma and had a weird screwed up head. And then here we are 17 years later, and he is the main villain of the Captain America movie, which is wild. I know he's CGI enhanced, but that's a lot of practical effects.
Yeah. Like,
you can tell, and it looks really good.
Yeah.
He looks scary, and like I said, I knew he was in it, so I knew that the leader was going to be part of it, and I was like, I swear to God, they're going to trot this man out with this CGI big bulbous head thing, and it's just going to break the movie. It's going to look so ridiculous, but they got it, like they did it right. They didn't make it comic accurate, but they did it right. I thought he was great. Like, if anybody in this movie didn't get enough screen time, it's Tim Blake Nelson.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which probably helps with the effects. Like, it's you'll understand this because you love Jaws. It's like Jaws. If you kept seeing the shark that didn't really work, you'd be like, that's fake.
Right. I think there was a great buildup. I feel like with all of the screen time that he got in this movie, I don't think this is the last time we're going to see him either.
I agree. He gets the post-credit stinger.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. And it's not even, I love that it's not that he knows that there's other universes out there. It's just that statistically, he's so smart. He's like, I've done the calculations. Like, it shit's about to get bad for y'all. That's such a weird superpower of like, yeah, I can defeat you with my mind and just make all of these moves where I don't even have to do anything, and everything's gonna fall apart. So,
right.
It's fun. It's just so fun.
I thought it was interesting that they also tried to tie in that whole Serpent Society.
Yeah.
Once again, but it's like, we still can't get it right. I'm not sure what's happening there.
I wonder, when reading about the, like them reshooting the movie, mm-hmm. I wonder if that's some of the stuff that, like, were there more of the Serpent Society, and they're like, this doesn't really work that well.
Which begs the question, are we going to get a movie concentrating more on the Serpent Society to then try and add this in and be like, look, it was relevant the whole time? Because we haven't had that.
Maybe. So, a lot of people thought that's what they were doing with Crossbones. And he wound up just being a very, very minor character who showed up a few times to mm-hmm. beat up Captain America. If that's all it is, I don't hate it, but it is, you know, kind of poisoning the well of characters you could use in the future.
Right.
I just
thought it was interesting. It's like they've tried a couple times, but it never really fits. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like they need their own movie and then work it in, like have the end part, the end credit, be something that ties to Avengers or to X-Men or whatever is happening here, to be like, okay, now we've tied them in. Now it's going to work.
I think maybe they're just scared that it's all going to sound too goofy when it's like, yeah, this is a team of bad guys and they're all... like
snakes,
like all their stuff is right. Just snake based. They just call themselves snake names. But we get Sidewinder, we get Copperhead as one of the characters, is that dark haired dude with the beard. Mm-hmm. I think that's the only ones they name.
It is.
But, you know, I mean, we got two of them.
But it's so, not even the main two. That's the part. Like, it's not even the main B-class.
So Giancarlo Esposito was a very, very late addition to the movie as Sidewinder. But it's not, nobody will say if it's because they added the character late or because they added and cast him, but he was unavailable for shooting. He was one of the, like, I think he filmed all of his scenes in like maybe a week or so back in September, October, something like that. It wasn't that long ago. So it kind of shows because he doesn't have, all of his interactions are very self-contained.
Right.
But for who he is in this movie, I mean, it kind of works. That showdown with him and Anthony Mackie, where he just like comes out of nowhere and blows up his car.
That's a jump scare right there. That was perfect.
Didn't see it coming. Didn't see it coming. Yeah. Like I thought that was really, really good. He goes down, not easy, but like he does dispatching fairly quickly. He gets his butt kicked a little bit, but you know, but axe to the chest and knife in the.
But again, it kind of begs my question: like, if you just gave up that easily and you surrendered, to me, there's something working in the background that says like this is coming back later. This guy wouldn't have given up otherwise.
I'm with you. Even if it'll suck if they never come back around to it, but I mean, I'll go back to Tim Blake Nelson, 17 years.
Yeah.
Like 17 years. And it's like, hey, we want to do this. And he's like, okay.
Well, Esposito's probably not going to be here in 17 years.
Yeah, that's the one, like, you know, it, love the man. He's so great. He is getting old. he's been working for a very long time. So 17 years, we might not get to see that version of Sidewinder if we wait 17 years. No. One of the other new characters we get introduced to, and she's different from the comics, Shira Haas, who is President Ross's security protection.
Mm-hmm.
In the comics, she's a mutant. She doesn't get superpowers here. Her name's Sabra in the comics. They recontextualize her origin and make her part of the Red Room. She came from that whole widow training thing.
Which is a theme they're doing. I mean, you know, we have her being part of the Red Room, and then, you know, Thunderbolts, we're going to have another Red Room.
Yeah, Yelena, you know, we get to see her some more. Well, did you see Hawkeye?
I did.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I meant to tell you that when we saw the Thunderbolts trailer, like, oh, hey, by the way, if you haven't seen Hawkeye, you have to see that before Thunderbolts.
few months. I think it's interesting how they're introducing so many of these concepts, and my hope is that we start tying some of these in or tying some of these up and being like, okay, where are we going? Because, I mean, this is what, the third, fourth Red Room widow we've seen?
I mean, so we have the Black Widow movie tackles a lot of that stuff. We see a lot of different ones there. And then we really, really get into Yelena there and in Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so, and we have her. Unfortunately, for me, at least, I love Yelena as a character. I think she's great. She's maybe the saving grace of the Black Widow movie, which isn't bad. It's just was okay.
It could have been better.
Yeah, that's the problem. It could have been better. they, for me, it's just like, yeah, but I still miss her.
Yeah.
Like, they're still not Black Widow. Yelena's great. She's funny. The sarcastic shit, the, like, especially in Hawkeye when she meets Kate Bishop, and she's just like, right. She's like, how do you do that stuff with the, you know, the card tricks and the, like, and, mm-hmm. and she's just like eating like peanut butter or something out of the jar. It's just like, this is such a crazy character. I'm so excited to see more of her in Thunderbolts. That whole cast just looks incredible.
It does.
And to have him show up and just get a moment with Captain America in this movie.
Yeah.
Really, I don't know. It was, that whole scene was really good. It was really heartfelt, also really funny. They have such a unique bond between them, mm-hmm. not just the characters, but just them, those personally. Two people. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can tell. And mm-hmm. it's so, so sweet. I got away from asking you, like, what you thought about, I think her name is Ruth Bat Serif that played Shira Haas. What you thought about her?
I thought she was great. I really like her and the things that she's done. She always catches me by surprise. She's one of those people that I really never think about. And then she's in something and I'm like, oh man, somebody really thought this through. I think that even though she didn't come out and say she has superpowers, I don't think this is the last we've seen of her in this either.
Yeah. I've not, the actress, I don't really know. Like, there's a few things she's been in that I've, like, seen bits and pieces of. I think it's really, really interesting to have an actress who is, I mean, I don't know that she's 5 feet tall.
I don't think she is. I think she's like 4 something.
To have this, you know, under 5 foot tall actress, 4 foot something actress come mm-hmm. in and play this character, A, who's the head of security for towering Harrison Ford. And then, like, you don't get to see her do much physical wise, but they specifically lay out a scene of like, no, you are going to get to see what she can do.
Yeah.
And her kind of sort of rescuing Cap and Falcon it's a fun bit of like action comedy. Like, you know, she just takes out like 6 people in like 30 seconds.
But I think that's what makes it great, is you're feeling like you don't have to be, at least from a woman's perspective, you don't have to be this big burly guy that's here to save the day. Yeah. Like, at 4 foot, whatever she is, 9, 10, I think I'm being generous there. She's, you know, kicking ass, and yeah. It's great.
Yeah. I really, really enjoyed her. I enjoyed what, like, I appreciated what they did. Because when you meet her, there's all this suspicion there. Like, mm-hmm. Is she actually on the good guy's side? Is she more on Thunderbolt Ross's side? Like, is she going to butt up against our good guys here? But, like, even those few minutes of her doing her investigation and uncovering that, like, oh, this is bigger, and actually, like, following through with that, not just having her be this, like, rigid, hard-headed, like, can't see past, like, oh, my loyalty is to Ross, or even, you know, doing the, like, really stupid, cheap thing and having this character who is, in the book, she's a Israeli. I don't think did they say she's Israeli in the movie? They say where she's from, but I can't remember if they say.
They do. And okay. She is Israeli.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Like, having her wind up being like some kind of terrorist on top of, like, and working with, you know, whatever terror plot this is. It's just, I appreciated they didn't go the, like, obvious route. And they make her a really smart, capable character who isn't, like, just kowtowing to, like, the dude that's in charge.
Right.
I thought she did great. I hope by not killing her, that means that there's more. I really do think that even if a lot of this stuff doesn't get followed up on, Marvel has learned their lesson of, like, if we don't have to kill the character, don't kill the character. Because Black Panther was probably the last one where, and I get it, like, it makes sense for that story, them facing off, and I'm assuming you've seen Black Panther.
I have.
Yeah. Them facing off and, him telling T'Challa, like, throw my body, in the ocean with my ancestors. And, I get that he had to die. But when you look back on it, it's like, yeah, but you lost a really, really great actor in Michael B. Jordan and that character that you could return to, whether you flip him and make Killmonger a good guy, or it's just he's great and that character's great. And I think they finally wised up and were just like, yeah, we have this prison. If we could not kill him and just say that we put him in the prison, that way if we need to come back to them, we can come back to them.
Right. Well, yeah. I think for that instance, at least in my mind, because the actor Chadwick died so suddenly.
Yeah.
I think they were almost like reeling to try and cover their behinds and be like, okay, how are we going to fix this? They're not looking at the obvious, like, okay, let's make a new Black Panther. They're like, the actor literally has passed away.
Yeah.
Like, he can't give this over. So how are we going to blend this? And the only thing they could figure out to do was to kill it. You were like, okay. And it wasn't like, look, it passes, like, here's the next, let's do a little standoff or something, do a competition, now you're the next Black Panther. But I think, I don't know, I think they still could potentially come back to that, maybe, I don't know. I'm on the fence.
It's going to be interesting to see what they do with the Black Panther. The only thing that's been talked about with that is, Ryan Coogler says that he's working on the script, and then Denzel Washington was making the rounds doing press for Gladiator 2, and just like, maybe, I don't think it was unprompted, I think somebody asked him about, like, hey, would you be in Black Panther or something like that, and he just throws it out there like, oh yeah, yeah, I've talked to Ryan Coogler, he's working on the script, I'm in the third movie. And it's like, what are you doing, man? You can't, the Marvel machine doesn't want you telling people that. But I mean, he's also like, what are you going to do? He's him. Like, you can't tell that man what to do. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with it. Go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to talk about Harrison Ford stepping in to replace William Hurt.
Yes.
I love William Hurt. I think he is such a underrated talent. And I don't know, much like Bill Paxton in a way, where it's like, not enough people appreciated that man. And now he's gone. And it's just like, I think Ford does a really, really good job of, like, stepping into that part and being not good guy, which is not something you see Harrison Ford do.
But we kind of do. And first off, he's been the president before.
Yeah. But
it's not like he has.
Like, he's always playing like a morally good person. Thunderbolt Ross is not. He's trying to be a good person now, but he's not a good guy. I don't know the last time we saw Harrison Ford play a not, like, I don't want to say a bad guy.
Ender's Game. He was a terrible guy.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You're lying to children to genocide an entire race.
I forgot about
Ender's Game. And you justify it.
Mostly because that movie was not great.
It wasn't. Okay, but the book, like, I know you haven't read the book. The book version of him is so incredibly even more deceiving than what you see on screen. Ender at the end of that feels so betrayed by his world that he can't help but align with the insect race.
Yeah.
And it's like we pushed him to do it. But Harrison Ford to me is amazing as a good guy. But I love when he's a little sneaky and a little evil and a little deceitful. To me, he plays that so well because we are so used to seeing this great American, you know, Han Solo.
Indiana Jones. Like, he is the quintessential.
The American president. Good,
like, it was John Wayne and then it was Harrison Ford. Like, they don't play bad guys. So when they're playing, like, there was a movie he did in the 80s called Presumed Innocent that they just remade as a miniseries.
Yeah.
And, I mean, spoilers for this freaking old-ass thing, which I guess the story's probably the same in the, I said 80s, it was in 1990. It's about a guy who you find out, like, a woman gets murdered, and they think he did it.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out he was having an affair with her and cheating on his wife. So it's this, it reframes this whole thing. Like, even if he didn't kill her, it's like, that he was this guy running around on his wife. And, you know, seeing him play stuff like, I'm with you. It's always,
well, I mean, the
really,
fugitive.
Really innocent. Yeah.
You've got Harrison Ford, Tommy Lee Jones, and Harrison Ford is the bad guy.
Yeah, running
85% of the time.
Yeah.
Running from the law. And for a while in that movie, you're like, he did it.
Did he? Did he do it? Yeah. Like, one-armed man, like, it sounds ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it's wild that those two movies were like, man, he had such a run from like 1980 to, I mean, he was the guy, man.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
So. Talk about Liv Tyler coming back in this cameo as Dr. Betty Ross. That's
So I'm so excited. We heard her voice early on, and I was like, oh, it's cool that they got her to come in and do the voice.
Right.
You know, that they just mic'd her up somewhere, and we get that. But then at the very end, we get her, you know... Again, 17 years since she appeared in a Marvel movie, coming back as Betty Ross and having this really, really sweet moment with her dad, Harrison Ford as her dad. I was such a good cap, not to use a pun, but.
And again, I think that, you know, she was in love with Bruce Banner. The original Hulk. Now, you know, dad is the Red Hulk.
Yeah.
It makes me question if, you know, they bring her back, is she going to try and find quote unquote cures? Like, are we going to reinvent ourselves? You know, I'm kind of wondering where we go here.
I'm with you. Like, I like her. I think she's a solid actress. And it's funny, like, her and Tim Blake Nelson are really, really, like, phenomenal and maybe the two of the better parts of The Incredible Hulk. And it sucked that because the movie underperformed, they had a bad experience with Ed Norton, that for the longest time, that was like the redheaded stepchild of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and to get him to come back, like, bring her back, let her do more. Like, Ross isn't dead. Like, so the Red Hulk, speaking of actors who were, you know, possibly edging out of parts, Harrison Ford, not yeah. getting any younger. yeah, it's if you're gonna do that, which I guess you can always have the Red Hulk as a character without Thunderbolt Ross, if something were to happen. He's just a CGI Hulk that looks like like Harrison Ford. Yeah, it would be really, really interesting. The one character, this sounds so bizarre, especially if you haven't seen the movie. In The Incredible Hulk, when Banner goes on the run, Betty winds up dating another, like, gets in a relationship with another scientist, played by Ty Burrell, who mm-hmm. everybody knows is Phil Dunphy from Modern Family. He plays a character named Leonard, and it's very like, oh, I think this is supposed to be Leonard Sampson from the Hulk like universe, who is mm-hmm. a big green-haired, buff, you know, muscly type of superhero guy. He has some kind of gamma related powers too, but it's a very like Easter eggy kind of thing that he's just playing a character named Leonard. I kind of hope, I love Ty Burrell. Like, Modern Family is so great. He's such a funny dude, and I would love to see him playing more in this universe. So I was like, ooh, are they gonna bring him back too? Like, maybe. I don't know. Wishful thinking, probably.
Probably. Maybe in 17 years.
It's already been 17 years, Stephanie.
Another 17.
I'll be dead in 17 years. I'm old too.
Not Harrison Ford old. I mean, no. It's old.
When he was shrinking down from the Hulk, I was like, are we going to see old Harrison Ford chest? We do, but only for a minute.
We absolutely do.
Like, and I'm not, he's in great shape.
He
to
is.
Be as old as he is, but
he's 82 years old. Yeah, that's incredible.
He does have the body type of a relatively healthy 82-year-old man, and that is not, I'll just say it's not gorgeous. I don't want to say it's ugly, because it's not ugly. It is what it is. But it's like, yeah, that's not pretty. So
here's my question. I know you know the comics way better than I do. I'm way out of touch with my comics. Am I remembering this wrong? Doesn't Dr. Betty Ross become She-Hulk?
Red She-Hulk.
Red She-Hulk. Which
sure
makes
she's
sense.
Red She-Hulk. Yeah.
So now it begs the question that I'm wondering, are we going to get a Red She-Hulk movie? And I mean, we've already had
an
original
TV show, which was the OG Green She-Hulk. Right. Everybody hated it. I enjoyed it, but, you know.
I haven't watched it. But my question is there's been another Dr. Betty Ross, which is Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah. Who was in the Eric Bana Hulk movie. If you're asking me which Betty Ross I want, I love Jennifer Connelly. I really love Jennifer Connelly.
Every man loves Jennifer Connelly. What is not to love about Jennifer Connelly? Don't get me wrong. Liv Tyler is great. But every man wants Jennifer Connelly.
And what's weird is most of the people I know, especially dudes, like you start talking about Jennifer Connelly, they start talking about when she was, like, they watched her when they were young, because she was in, what's the puppet movie?
Labyrinth. David Bowie.
Yes. And that's the first thing. But that's not where I came to love Jennifer Connelly. And I didn't know she was in that movie because I've never seen that movie.
We've got to fix that because there are so many things.
People would talk
play
about,
off
like,
of that.
Oh, you got, yeah. Like, I didn't know. And, you know, eventually it came, I was like, oh, okay. So that's where it's one of those things where, like, oh, I watched her when I was 13 in that movie and I fell in love with her. Like, we were around the same age. And for me, it's The Rocketeer, baby.
It's always The Rocketeer. Timothy Dalton, are you freaking kidding me? It was the first movie I ever saw her in before The Labyrinth, because I guess my mother thought The Labyrinth might be a little scary with David Bowie as the Goblin King.
I'm 45, and I look at stuff from that movie, and I'm like, why are kids watching this?
But I tell you what, The Rocketeer, like the way she played up Timothy Dalton, that whole... It makes the movie, and she's just incredible all the way through.
Yeah.
And for me, that's where you fall in love with Jennifer Connelly.
It's like classic.
It is.
Hollywood actress kind of thing. And then like that, The Rocketeer, there's a movie she did called Dark City. Mm-hmm. It's on a totally different wavelength than The Rocketeer. But I saw Dark City because it was by the guy who did The Crow, the Brandon mm-hmm. Lee Crow, and Alex Proyas. And I loved that movie. And like I think Roger Ebert had like written that it was like his favorite movie of 1998. I think he even did like a commentary track for the original DVD. Mm-hmm. And so when it came out on video, I watched it and like, yeah, I love, she's great in that too. Add in the fact, like if you don't know, Jennifer Connelly is married to a prominent MCU actor, the mm-hmm. guy that plays Vision. So
yeah,
like she already has MCU ties. Mm-hmm. I get why they didn't bring her version of Betty Ross back, because it ties more into the MCU. But yeah, like she, yeah, it just.
But she was also in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah, yeah. She's the voice of the little computer. I forget mm-hmm. what he calls what.
Karen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah, she has a lot of great MCU. I love her. I don't think I've seen anything she's done probably for the last few. Wait, she's in the Snowpiercer TV series?
Mm-hmm.
I did not watch that. Now I want to watch that. I forgot she was in Top Gun Maverick. I did see Top Gun Maverick. So.
And I mean, she's fantastic. And again, Top Gun Maverick, you have the new Falcon. It's like we're pulling all these characters from other movies to be like, yeah, group up again. We liked that so well the first time.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of our new Falcon, who got introduced in Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I thought he was fine. In the Joaquin Torres, played by Danny Ramirez, I thought he was fine in the TV series. I think he is absolutely standout in the movie. He does such a good job.
Well, and I think to say this, I think that was a hard role for him to walk into and try and replace Anthony Mackie and be like, okay, I'm going to be...
Anthony Mackie is
still there.
Like, Mackie gets to kind of carve out his own cap because the other cap has exited the building. You have to be the Falcon. While the guy who originated the role was standing there going like, nah, man.
Right. Well, and he's still doing it in the movie up until the end.
Yeah.
So he's still like, no, we still got work to do. But, I mean, freaking Danny Ramirez just lives up to that part, and he's owning it so much more in the movie. Like, he's more confident about becoming the new Falcon and staying with the MCU for the next few movies.
Yeah.
It's kind of the feeling I got.
I really, really like him. I really, really like him. Oh, yeah. I, as an actor, I like him. Like, I thought, like I said, I thought it was fine in the show. He's a little bit wasted in the show because he's just not really the focus. But he's great as a fanboy in Maverick. And then he was weird, not MCU, but Marvel ties. There was a show, God, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, on Fox when they were still separate from Disney. They decided they were going to do an X-Men-related TV show called The Gifted, which a lot of people didn't watch. It was on for 2 seasons. I watched it. I loved it. He was in it for like maybe 5 or 6 episodes, maybe not even that many. And that was the first thing I ever saw him, man. Like, I thought he was freaking great. But yeah, he absolutely kills it here. I was legitimately upset when I thought we were about to see him die.
Oh, yeah. I was too. I think it's also interesting that he's in The Last of Us. Now, he's not a main character in The Last of Us, but he's a 2-bit character in The Last of Us, which for me begs the question, that next season that's supposed to be coming out this year, I wonder if we get to see more of Danny Ramirez in that role.
Yeah, I would bet you that we do. So I enjoyed The Last of Us. It's been so long since the first season that every time somebody brings it up, I'm like, oh yeah, that was a good show.
And it's a great video game. So if you haven't played the video game,
I have not. I have
you're
not.
You're really missing out.
I know. And I've heard, like, I know a lot of the spoilery stuff that we're gonna get. I've prepared myself when I do get around to watching season 2. I'll probably watch it while it airs. But if and when I do watch it, I know that I'm going to be upset. So I am prepared for that. Like, everybody who's played that game has been like, man, you don't know what you're in for when you get to season 2. Because if they're doing the second game, oh boy.
Yeah. So. Well, and I'm not sure that we're going to be in the second game because we haven't fully finished the first game.
That's I've read that too. So, but so it's this weird thing of where, like, since I haven't played the games, much like the Harry Potter movies decades ago, since I didn't read the books or play the games, I feel like I get to be a different kind of, like, I don't have to feel like, oh, they're screwing this up. I kind of just get to be like, oh, I don't know. Like, I guess it was what it was. It, you know, it was fine by me. So, I know some people that were big fans of the first game that didn't love some of the stuff they did in the first series, first season. And I don't know. I loved it. So
I loved it. I've played the game. I thought it was a great version of game to series. Those are so hard to do, kind of like Fallout. You either have an amazing series or it crashes and burns and everybody hates
it. We are in the golden age of video game adaptations. It has been so long since there was a truly, truly, like, terrible, like, what the fuck is this video game adaptation on TV or film.
And you know why that is, right?
Because the video game people are very, like, vocal now.
So it's because, think about it, when you were a kid, you're sitting home, it's Saturday morning, you're busting out your original NES, and you're knee deep in Super Mario Brothers. You know every bit of what's coming in that game because you can't save it.
Yeah, the people that played the games are now making
movies. Yeah. Right. And they're making these series. The people that played Fallout when it first came out are the people that are now roughly our age that are now making the adaptations going, look, hey, we have to stay true to this. This is how it flows.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. That shows in a lot of things. Like, we're talking about a superhero movie. It shows that the people making the movies
read the comics,
moderately fans of that style of storytelling, why it works, why people enjoy it, why, you know, and not like, oh, we're going to make the X-Men. And I do love me some OG X-Men movies, but we're going to make the X-Men. We cannot have them in bright, goofy colored costumes that have to be in black militaristic leather because the public is just not going to buy it.
Right.
You know, cut to 20 plus years later, and it's like, oh, we finally get Wolverine in the yellow and blue. Come on, man.
Yeah.
I hope this movie makes a shit ton of money. It's not tracking to make much. I think it's like $80 million, they said, as long as the Sunday fall off isn't like ginormous. It's kind of a shame. It cost them because they had to reshoot the movie for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. I think the cost is like $200 million. So it'll probably, with foreign ticket sales, at least make its money back. So I guess there's that. But I don't know.
Here's the thing. I feel like because you can get it next weekend on Peacock
doesn't help. It'll be on Disney Plus in March.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people are like, why am I going to drag the kids out of the house?
Yeah.
Get them in the theater. They're going to be loud, amped up. I can't watch this movie. It costs a
shit ton of money.
Yeah.
I mean, even cheap movie tickets aren't cheap.
Yeah. So. But I mean, even look at today. We were in the theater. There were, what, 30 of us?
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, it was the Thursday showing, but still.
Still.
15 years ago, it would have been packed.
Pretty
packed.
Like, people would have taken off early for work. People would have, you know, immediately gone there after work. And these days, because you can so readily bootleg it or get it next month on Disney Plus, people are like, well, look, I wouldn't have spent the money. I'll just watch it when it comes out.
Yeah.
And so I think they have to, I think we can't look at ticket sales anymore for opening weekend as to how much this is going to do well. I think you have to look at how popular it becomes number wise of people watching it on Disney Plus or Amazon Prime or Peacock or all those platforms.
Yeah. I guess it's my old man way of thinking about like, well, I didn't make any money at the theater. So, and with Disney, it is always a little different. Cause it's not just the movie. It is like also the streaming and also the merchandising. I mean, we haven't had a Star Wars movie in how long? It doesn't matter. They're making a mint off the merchandising.
Right.
Like the shows are up and down and up and down. But
well, I mean, like you just bought a brand new hoodie from this movie.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
made money straight off of you buying that hoodie.
Yeah.
And they made money off me buying an OG Captain America shirt.
Yeah. So.
I mean, not the right one, but.
Yeah, I miss. Like, my little black geek heart misses, like, yeah, the shit that I love made a mint at the freaking theater. Yeah. Like, it's a weird sense of pride, but, like, and I know everybody's a damn Deadpool fan now, and I try not to be a gatekeeper and be like, you know what, man? I was a Deadpool fan in middle school, and nobody thought it was cool, and everybody was like, why are you reading low rent Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Because that's what he looked like. And I'm like, no, he's awesome, man. He kills people.
But here's the thing. If they hadn't cast Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool, I don't think Deadpool would have continued
past the first
movie.
You're right.
Because Ryan Reynolds
character. He's the one that, like, he can't say it, but he's the one that leaked that test footage.
Yeah.
That ultimately got the first movie made. But here's what's funny is I was after X-Men Origins Wolverine, I was like, don't bring him back. Don't bring him back. He can't be Deadpool. Stop ruining my Deadpool. In hindsight, I can look at it and be like, oh, that wasn't his fault. Obviously, that was people not knowing what they were doing in that movie. But at the time, I was just like, it didn't work in the last movie. Why are you trying to make it work in this one? And then I saw the first Deadpool movie and I was like, oh. Oh, yeah, this is right. This is what you should be doing.
Yeah.
I was wrong. Keep doing this.
And it's because it works, because even though you don't see his face for much of any movie
that's
Deadpool, it works.
I love that. That's one of the things that makes me so upset. And we're getting off on tangents now. But, like, that was one of my things, like going into the Deadpool movie. I'm like, they cast the most handsome guy on the planet. They're going to be like, you can't wear the mask the whole time. You can't have the fucked up face. You can't, like, they're just going to do that. And it's going to, it's just so disingenuous to the character. And it's just like, no, we figured out a way to make the mask work. Just like with Spider-Man, the evolution of that mask is great. And having an expression in the, like, built into the mask.
Right.
It, like, that's what works, you know? I when Spider-Man showed up in Civil War, like, some of the, like, footage leaked of, like, the filming of, like, them in the costumes, and, like, he didn't have, Tom Holland didn't have any, like, there weren't lenses in his eyes, and people were, oh, like, they're just going to CGI his eyes. It's going to be terrible. And I'm like, no, guys, they're doing the comic eyes. We're going to get where they move. Like, we've never had that. We've just had these, like, rigid lenses. And you look at it now, and it's like, oh, yeah, duh. But back then, even though it wasn't that long ago, it was just like, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to work, man, but God, they do it and it works. And it's just, yeah, it does my geek heart proud when they get it right. Even if it's not quote accurate the comic, it's just like, well, it looks like it's supposed to look. And when it makes a shit ton of money, that makes me really happy. So I wish this was going to make $500 million. I understand why it isn't, but you know,
so to kind of tie back in to Brave New World, I was a little disappointed that Sam doesn't wear the helmet, but one scene.
So Howard Mackey, I keep saying Howard Mackey.
Anthony Mackey.
Howard Mackey is a comic book writer who, like, for whatever reason, Mackey, I immediately go to Howard Mackey. Anyway, Anthony Mackey did an interview where he talked about the helmet. And I guess somebody asked him, and I'm with you. I like the helmet. It's weird that that's one of the popcorn buckets, and it's not really part of the movie.
The movie.
He hates the helmet.
I know he does. It,
and does not want to wear it. And I think that's one of the stipulations of, like, hey, man, I don't want to wear this helmet.
But I think, again, we're back to that Deadpool thing. I think Anthony Mackie is incredibly handsome.
Yeah.
I think that he's not wanting to cover up his face, which is his moneymaker in his mind. And I think that that's why he refuses to wear that helmet. But for somebody that is OG Captain America, it doesn't look right without the helmet.
Yeah.
And again, make the popcorn bucket... Of all the things, like, make some wings or something if we're not going to do the helmet. But
the shield makes sense. The helmet doesn't.
No.
Also, you know, just from a logistical standpoint, you are flying through the air. You're definitely going to need a helmet, man. Like, you know, you're just going pretty fast. Like, anything hitting you while you're going that fast, it's going to give you a concussion, dude.
Like, it's going to leave a mark.
Yeah.
There's not a, I don't know. Like, that's what was so great about, I guess, Steve Rogers as Captain America for me. He wore the helmet.
Yeah.
We saw the helmet.
It did evolve and it did get better. And
it did.
By the end, even in Endgame, like, he's on the battlefield, he's wearing the helmet. So
yeah
it's, I'm with you. Evolve the helmet, make it make more sense, make it look better, find a way to give him more expressiveness so he feels like it he's still there and it's not just the helmet. I'm with you, I do like that look.
And I think, again, creating some of the stuff from Deadpool, you know, Spider-Man, taking those features that we can now use with masks and relating that to Captain America and being like, let's not make it such a hard helmet. What if we design X, Y, or Z? I don't know. I wish the helmet was a little more a part of it, just because it's so iconic for that character.
Yeah. I'm with you. But yeah, we love the movie. We'll see how it does going forward. I mean, it's certainly, whether it makes money or not, it's certainly like, unlike everything they've done for the last few years, it doesn't feel like the stuff that happens here is going to be like glossed over. There's certainly some things that they're going to have to address, bring back. The characters aren't going anywhere. So that feels good. Like, as opposed to like watching things like She-Hulk on TV or Moon Knight or the Eternals and being like, they didn't know what they were doing. And now I've watched this. They won't do this again. And unfortunately, these characters will now be pushed aside because they screwed it up. I shouldn't say that about She-Hulk. I enjoyed She-Hulk, but
I haven't watched it.
I get why people didn't like it, though, but I enjoyed it. It's fun. Anyway, I actually had only planned. I was like, we might only talk for about 30 or 45 minutes, and we've been going for an hour and a half. So that was really nice. go check out everything else we do over at xwingfiles.com. Jacob and I are currently revisiting The Acolyte and trying to find some enjoyment where we can. It gets harder as the show goes on, but we're doing it. We love Star Wars, even when Star Wars isn't great. And of course, the podcast I do with my buddy Adam, Nerds Ruin Everything, where we just talk about whatever nerdy old man stuff we want to talk about. I'm sure we'll be talking about Captain America because he's going to see it tomorrow. Miss Stephanie has a YouTube channel that you should go visit where she plays World of Warcraft. And that's her big thing. She's a big wower.
I am. So, but this has been so much fun. Thank you for letting me do this with you.
Yeah, this was fun. I had a really good time. And I don't know. Well, I don't know what the next big Marvel thing down the pipeline is. But there's something before Thunderbolt. Oh, Daredevil. I don't know. Are you going to watch Daredevil?
I plan to.
Okay. Did you watch the Netflix shows?
No.
Okay.
Apparently, I've got some TV watching to do.
Yeah, that's a lot, though. There's 3 seasons of Daredevil, 2 seasons of Jessica Jones, 2 seasons of Luke Cage, 1 season of Iron Fist, and 1 season of The Defenders. They're only about 8 to 10 episodes apiece, but that's a lot of TV. And I don't know how much of it is going to tie into Daredevil. I just know that it is canon to those Netflix shows. And 2 seasons of The Punisher. Sorry, forgot about that. Which, honestly, Daredevil's great. If you're going to watch any of those, John Bernthal's Punisher, oh, man, it's okay. So good. I don't know if you like John Bernthal or not.
I do.
Yeah, you got to watch his Punisher, man.
Okay.
It's really good. I was not a huge fan of his. His Punisher, though, that pulled me around. Like, okay. Walking Dead made me like, I'm like, I don't really care about this guy. Him as the Punisher? I was like, oh, wait, no, I love this guy. Anyway, yeah, go check out all that stuff out. I don't know when we'll record another episode, but this is fun, so we'll definitely be recording more. So we'll see you guys soon.